ceremony. Into the small hole, your wife poured a stream of ashes, then dropped the pair of dog tags that clinked your slog through napalm fog that hung 2 decades from your sob's rearview mirror. Unstrung beads from Belize slipped your daughter's fingers like blue glass beads, while your son let fly a clutch of red hawk, owl, and osprey feathers scavenged on walks with you along the river. We who could sing sang Amazing Grace and passed the lit sweet grass braid, its wispy wreath wrapping us. Nancy Mitchell, in her book, The Out of Body Shop. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. My guest today is poet Nancy Mitchell. Nancy is the poet laureate of the city of Salisbury, Maryland. She has published extensively, is a 2012 Pushcart Prize winner, and is associate editor of Special Features for Plume, an online poetry magazine. Nostalgia is not the right word to describe the feeling that Nancy Mitchell's poems evoke. There is nothing wistful about them, or any desire expressed to return to some past time. One is simply placed again in that time, and Nancy Mitchell's skill is such that one can feel the weight of that day, the pouring of the ashes, the clink of the dog tags, the feathery weight of the beads slipping past fingers. I find no metaphor here, no simile. And yet we are wrapped in the texture, the heaviness of that day of ceremony. And it is the 1960s. And it is Vietnam all over again. Nancy, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Hi, Hal. I'm so pleased to be here. And you always just say the most lovely things about my poems. Thank you so much.
Well, your poems are very moving and are excellent. We're a year into the COVID-19 pandemic now, and a little over 10 months into the lockdown. How have you been doing as poet laureate? And what are your plans, Nancy, for the coming year?
You know, I'm amazed at how much I've accomplished really how much connection I've had with people during the pandemic. And I think that's because of these wonderful Zoom Poets on the Plaza poetry readings that the city has sponsored me in doing. So in September, I was, it was for National Recovery Month. And I featured poets who have been in recovery for years and years or who are freshly in recovery. And in October was for the LGBTQT+ movement, which was a wonderful pairing of young people who had just come out. And Sue Ellen Thompson read with the wonderful James Allen Hall. And it was this generational kind of tension between them, which was absolutely marvelous. And then I did November was Veterans in celebration of Veterans Month. So I've just been amazed at how many people will come on board and read their poems, terrific poets from everywhere, and try to pair local as well as very well-known poets. So that's been very intimate, and I'm so appreciative of that. And I've done, you know, continued to do write poems for the city for special occasions, the occasional poem celebrating all of the accomplishments and news. And right now I'm working with the Wicomico Environmental Trust. We have this thing, they sponsored this thing called Buaga, which is bundle up and go outside. And it's this wonderful path with installation arts. And I've written the haikus to point people to different places to collect materials for an installation piece. So actually, it's been quite lively, oddly enough. And I feel like the connections have been profound. So I have so much gratitude for this technology that I found so frustrating before.
You're doing most of this on Zoom then, or virtually? Yes.
They're on Zoom. We have actually tomorrow night, I think you would really love this. It's the series is called the Poets on the Plaza Reading Series. And we have the terrific Tommy Blount, who was just a finalist for the National Book Award, and Nandy Comer, who's an amazing poet. But they're both Black poets in celebration of Black History Month. And it's going to be a terrific reading. So I try to keep the readers small. I like to have that intimate two readers, and then they read, and maybe there's a little chat afterwards. And then the whole month is filled up in February, and then in March, it's National Women's History Month. So we've got a lot of wild women on there. I don't know if you've heard of the Nasty Women Anthology. Well, they're going to be reading.
It sounds wonderful.
It's wild and wonderful. You have to go to that. I mean, it's just like, you know, unleashed in a way. So, and then April is National Poetry Month, and lots of things are happening then. So I've been just really weekly Zooms almost since the pandemic. I did take December off, but back into it, December and January, then right back into it in February. And it's been terrific, I have to say. And please come. Yeah, I'll send you a link, and I think you'd really enjoy it. And there may be poets that you'd like to interview as well, you know, that I would be happy to introduce you to them. So,
well, please do. I would appreciate that. Send me some links, and I'll try to join you.
That would be terrific. We'd love that.
No, I think that's excellent. Well, it looks like you're making really good use of your position as poet laureate, and that you're giving the city of Salisbury and Wicomico County full value for their trust in you. But we knew that was going to happen anyway.
It's been an honor, and it's a pleasure. And just to introduce someone to poetry and for them to say, wow, I love this. And then locals will just send me a little poem, and I'll say, absolutely, come on board and read it for the Poets on the Plaza audio page. And on Valentine's Day, maybe, I just think this is terrific. Someone emailed me and said, I'd love to read a Naroda poem and then tell the story of my, when I met my husband. And I said, will you video that and get some wine and light the fire? And I am going to put it on there. So I think that's just delightful that people are now reaching out and wanting to share a story about how poetry impacted their life. So it's all good. It's all warm and wonderful. So I'm tickled to death to be doing it.
Well, I look forward to getting the links that you're going to send me. Thank you for that. Let me shift gears for a bit and ask you to read some of your poems and comment on them, if you would. In the opening of the program, I said that your poetry is textual, and that didn't come, Nancy, out of any intellectual pursuit or knowledge of textual poetry. It's the way I felt when I was reading your work. I could feel, these poems, and I can sense their density, and they inevitably take me somewhere. somewhere that is not intellectual, but almost physical. There's a sense of a direct experience with what you're saying in your poetry. And I hope that I'm correct in this sense that I don't find metaphor here. I don't find simile particularly, but what I find is kind of a direct experience with what you're saying, with what you're presenting us. As I said earlier, that's no intellectual thing. That's a feeling that happens. So in that sense, I'd like to ask you to read your poem, Chocolate on My New Pajamas, and then talk a little bit about that poem, if you would.
Okay, thank you. I'd be delighted. And your comments make me extraordinarily happy, because that's what I'm hoping poetry, that's what I want my poetry to do. I want you to feel it. I don't want you to think it. I want it to get into your body and move you. So, Chocolate on My New Pajamas, spun from 100 cocoons of mulberry leaf-fed silkworms, light as fog scrim, skimming my skin, thin as a rose petal, luminous as a full moon, translucent as the champagne flutes we raised and raised to our bouquet of married decades. To Auld Lang Syne, and in your slurred but perfect French, raised the last of it to la fin de la civilité, et la fin de vérité, and et la fin de la liberté. You vive mon bébé me, and I vive mon bébé you back. And we slippery kissed until we fell like Rome. Fiddle faddle sticky and Godiva smudge fingers. The blazing bank logs toppling like Doric columns in the fireplace.
Tell us about this poem, Nancy.
Well, this poem, you know, it was at the end of 2019 when things were, you know, there's kind of this desperation, this sense that we are at the end of everything that we knew in terms of civility, liberty, and truth. And a toppling like Doric column certainly is an allusion to the fall of the Roman Empire. And it's like, so, you know, here we are in these beautiful, we are, I was, the speaker was in these beautiful new silk pajamas and in the process of celebrating and drinking champagne and eating chocolate and fiddle faddles, we made a mess, a beautiful mess. And then, you know, French kissing, slippery kissing, and then we fell. So it's a celebration of the sensual life in the middle of, you know, a falling civilization is how I saw it at the present. And I guess it's a live for today. It's like we're all going down. So in the process, let's go down with some kind of beauty and pleasure, which, you know, I don't always feel that way, but I did feel that way at that time. And it sort of amused me, you know, in the sense that this kind of, I mean, the desperation in the sense of champagne, you know, toasting and toasting and toasting, and then just kind of crumbling into a heap. So it was a celebration and also kind of a eulogy at the same time. So I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Well, I found this poem, and in fact, I find most of your poetry very, very sensual. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, not so sensual in a sexual way, but sensual in a tactile way, in the sense that you can feel the silk, And as you read this thing, and then that becomes even more alive. And you perhaps did not mean this, but this is what it said for me. When the columns fall in the fireplace, you remember the sound. It's not a heavy sound. It's when the logs go down, they go kind of a shh, mm-hmm. kind of a shh. And it's like the feel of silk and the sound of silk when it's rubbed, those columns come down. And there's something, so you're there in that room, and you feel what was going on. Well, let me ask you, you mentioned this, but what do you want us to feel as we read this poem? What do you want? Where are you taking us? Please.
Well, Hal, you know, I am moved to tears that you said you felt it in your beautiful reading of this, you know, the texture of silk. You know what I want? I want you to be with us. I want you to be in the room with us. I want you to feel what we're feeling. And if I've succeeded, then I'm incredibly happy. It's, you know, I feel that what I want to do is bypass the brain. The brain is a tyrant. It's always making these decisions. And one of the most effective ways to bypass the brain is through sound. So I use sound a lot to move us through the poem. And also I just try to be in that experience. And I know it's a, you know, I'm not, they are sensual poems, and that's how I re-enter the past. I'm reminded of something by a sense, and then I let that lead me to that. And if I can lead you into this intimacy, this intimate space by way of the poem, I'm really happy. I want you to be there with me. You know, I'm teaching a course called Intimacy with Poetry, How to Enter Intimate Spaces for the a lifelong learning community. And I think that's, you know, we don't have, you know, these experiences lately. We don't have these tactile sensory experiences, and we most definitely don't have smell. We can't feel each other. We can't be close in any other way except these Zoom meetings and through words. So I if I'm succeeding in that, I'm deliriously happy. And yeah, I guess it's just like, come be with me, come play with me, come be a part of this.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you've succeeded beautifully. Let me ask you to read "Girl Pre-Hendrixed," because that touched me particularly.
"Girl Pre-Hendrixed," pearl-necked, pink cashmere sweater set, breast in Hollywood vassarette, shirtwaist dressed, peonies matched to Papagallo flats. Indian bleeding, Madras Bermuda shorts, 9 hungover holes of golf with daddy's law buddy's boy bow, bound for Wake Forest in the fall. Glamour do's and don'ts, Grace Kelly brick shampoo ads, mother's pilfered slumber party, Merle Norman face mask. Boys in bandline polos tucked into khakis, hell bound in English leather, imprint of the brick wall they pushed her up against, assessed in the vanity's three-way mirror. Taboo spritzed silk pillowcase. The Fleetwood's "Good night, my love," or if she's lucky, comes softly on her solid state transistor. Pre-Hendrixed is before the 60s, before like Jimi Hendrix hit the scene. And this is, you know, I'm a child of the 50s, and Jimi Hendrix with his Are You Experienced album, oh, everything went into, it was like, okay, so, you know, none of this is going to cut it anymore. You know, none of this Southern, you know, it prevailed in the South, but, you know, if you were moving with the times and wanted to catch that energy that was coming around in the 60s, that was over, you know? So it was really interesting to me to think about how sort of cocooned that world was before the 60s, before Jimi Hendrix album kind of was the crossover point for me. I got it for my 16th birthday. My really cute hippie boyfriend gave it to me. And it was like, ooh, okay. And then it was off to the races. You know, I went to Kent State. I was a hippie, not full on hippie, you know, but I did live in a modest little commune in Denver. And, you know, it was a before and after, basically, I think, in the 60s. Yeah.
The 50s were clearly the time, my high school days and college days in the 50s. So I dated this pre-Hendrix girl that that you're talking about here. And in fact, I married one of them, happily married to one of them. And it was clearly a unique time for us. And the 60s were a shattering time because we had to now make some adult decisions. And then time has moved so rapidly, so rapidly since then. Let me ask you, this is a beautiful poem, but what do you want this poem to say to the post-Hendrix generation? What do you want it to say to this generation? What do you want them to feel?
Well, I think it's the sense that was a time that was lost to us, but it wasn't without its kind of traditions and sensual pleasures in a sense. But the lines were pretty far, you know, well drawn between the sexes. And I think anyone reading this, first of all, most people wouldn't get any of the references. I mean, who knows what English leather is anymore, taboo, or certainly the Fleetwoods, which were just and the Fleetwoods were so beautiful. It always reminded me of singing through a, you know, string telephone. And they just were, it was just so beautiful and just such a, it was like Sandra Dee. It was like pearls. It was like this time when, you know, femininity was something else in a way that we have not had it since. You know, femininity was a soft kitten, you know? It was like, being a part of that, yet, you know, there was this male force hell-bent in English leather, you know, that was always sort of breaking through that. Yet, you know, and young women becoming aware of their power as sexual creatures. You know, this cloister and this sort of, you know, I don't know what else to call it, but the slumber parties were always, you know, these places where you did your nails and you, you know, used your Merle Norman face mask and talked about boys the whole time. Or, you know, this is interesting. Or we would go through our, you know, album, our school, high school yearbook, and talk about and try to, we'd say, this is a girl who does, this is a girl who doesn't. So there was always this sort of mystery surrounding sexuality. And then when the 60s came along, it was just like things were just ripped apart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends remained in this era, you know, pre-Hendrix. And it was just like beyond me in a sense that you're not coming along, you know, this is where it's happening. And then, you know, they stayed in that. And I can imagine how my brother was older than I, and wasn't quite there. He was more probably in your generation. And there was a sense that they were robbed of a world, and it was so disconcerting. And it was gone. So it's fascinating to me. It's like looking back on that world, they'd have to do a lot of checking, you know, to see what these references referred to. But at the same time, it's just like this, it was an palpably different time. And there's probably, where can we find the places where this generation, if they read it, can also identify with that? Where are these places, you know? And I think there are a couple of them. We don't have transistor radios anymore, but certainly young women and men go to sleep listening to a song, you know? And it's always that cocooned. I always think of a cocoon with the 50s, and I think of a cocoon with the Fleetwoods. Are you a fan? Oh, they're just such beautiful songs, you know? Oh my goodness. So, you know, dancing, this perfumes. It was mysterious, and I actually have serious nostalgia for it. It was sort of a bumpy transition for me into the 60s. But
Nancy, we're almost out of time. I think back about these 50s, and it's clear that they are a time that will never be recovered, and perhaps we probably don't want to recover those times. Awareness, power, are all important. But let me ask you to read "Always a Woman, a War or a Lost Cause." Let's go to the family now. And if you would read that poem, I would appreciate it.
"Always a Woman, a War or a Lost Cause" was why, Dad said, those kind of men ended up at Zorro's, a 5-bar stool hole in the wall, its red neon Z slashing the dark alley behind the Tasty Freeze. The proximity, the reason for Dad's, "I'll take the big kids out for some ice cream," leaving Mom alone to wrangle the other 3, all under 4, into bed. As Dad bellied the bar, we huddled in the only booth. I stirred my hard vanilla scoop into soup while my brother bore a hole with his tongue to the bottom of his hot fudge sundae cup. A kind of linguist in the making if I ever saw one. When Dad, 3 whiskeys under his belt, bellowed, "Soldiers, Tinch Hut," we'd slide across the slick vinyl seats to our feet and execute perfect salutes. Hearty slaps on Dad's back and "You're raising them up right" on our way out. He'd idle the engine, look down the alley and mutter, "What a bunch of sorry sad sacks. What a bunch of sorry sons of bitches." Although my hair was shiny as patent leather from all the cream, I was, as Dad pinching my waist pointed out, getting really fat. As the nights marched on and on towards 7th grade.
We have about 15 seconds, Nancy. Tell me about this poem.
Well, this poem is again the 50s, and it was an era where parents were not helicopter parents, and they took their kids to bars, and they hung out. You know, we were exposed to a lot, and we were sort of part of the, you know, our parents' fallout in terms of my father's was in 3 wars, and this was a place that he went, and he, you know, enlisted his children to do these things, which might even be considered very bizarre now. I mean, you know, but at the same time, it was just like we had this little world within their worlds, and we were just kind of at the mercy of whatever was going on in their life. And we kind of made our own little cozy spot, you know, doing our own things.
Well, Nancy, all these poems do speak of a particular era, the 1950s and the early 1960s. And they're all poems that, for me anyway, capture the gritty texture of life at that time. I want to thank you for your work and thank you for joining me this morning. And I want to thank all of you for listening. And let me encourage you to read Nancy Mitchell's book, The Out of Body Shop. It's excellent. This is Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.